Yeah, no, Carl. So Brian, you're up.
Good evening. I'd like to call this meeting to order. And I would like to call this Planning Commission work session to order for Thursday, May 2nd, 2024. My name is Brian Halpert, and I am acting chair of the Clark County Planning Commission. So before we begin tonight, I would like to announce that our Planning Commission work sessions are hybrid, both in person and by way of WebEx. For the virtual and in-person members of the Planning Commission and staff, please ensure that your microphones are turned off or muted unless you are speaking. There will not be any public comment during this work session, but members of the public can watch or listen. This evening's agenda is planned as follows. We'll call to order, which we did, and Jose Alvarez and Jenna Kay will present issue paper 6, a SEPA overview and scoping. And then we'll have some question and answers from there. So Jenna, are you taking the lead tonight? Thank you.
All right, good evening, everyone. So my name is Jenna Kay. I'm a land use planner in community planning. Nice to be with you all this evening. And I'm going to be walking us through an overview of issue paper 6, which is about the SEPA process and as it relates to the comprehensive plan. Larissa, I'm going to fiddle with the sizing because it looks a little bit weird. Okay. Okay, let's go to the next slide. Okay, so my plan is we'll do a quick check-in on where we're at with the comp plan progress, just make sure everyone's tracking where we're at. Then we'll provide an overview of the SEPA process and then end with some next steps. So let's go to the next slide. Okay. So this slide is just a high-level overview of the whole comprehensive planning update process. And as you may know, the legislature approved an extension for the due date for the county's comp plan update. So we are working towards having adoption of the updated plan before December 31st, 2025. The check marks show items completed so far in the comp plan update process. So we are almost through project initiation. We are just waiting on a final decision on how population and employment projections are going to be allocated between the jurisdictions. Maybe I'll pause there and see if Oliver or Jose want to give an update on that item.
Hi. Good evening, Planning Commission members. Jose Alvarez, Community Planning. The since you made your recommendation at the end of March, we have had a work session with council, updated them on your recommendations. We've tried to work through a couple of those. Been meeting with the cities. We had update employment information that we shared with council, and had a meeting this morning with the cities on a hybrid proposal for the residential. And we will be having a hearing with council next Tuesday, May 7th, 10 a.m. for them to consider your recommendations and the work that we've done subsequent to that. Question.
All the cities agree.
This is Eldon. Have all the cities agreed?
I think there's general agreement on the employment. I think there's begrudging acceptance of a compromise. Is that the way I would put it? I think some jurisdictions would still prefer method B. I think CAMAS has compromised some. I think what we proposed to council is a 50-50 split, with CAMAS doing 75-25, and that leaves about 519 units, which the county, the Vancouver unincorporated area, would absorb, is the proposal we've shared with, we'll be sharing with council on Tuesday.
This is Commissioner Baker. What was the agreement with the employment? How did that kind of settle in?
We just showed the total number of jobs by UGA. We got some information back from the ES Employment Security Department on the split for construction, where I think they had an estimate of between 20 and 25% of the construction jobs would require some land. So we, I think, split the difference, about 22.5%, and allocated that. And then for the remainder, we just applied the differences, the 4% for work from home, mm-hmm. and what was the other two categories? The government employment, it would just divided those up by jurisdiction, by UGA. So if a jurisdiction doesn't have a lot of work from home, let's say, they can demonstrate that and have the full allocation. It doesn't have to sort of apply to them. They have a way to address that. Anything else?
Okay.
Yep.
So while we are wrapping up that piece of the sort of the last sort of key major planning assumption to let us move forward with the planning, we are sort of starting to take the next steps to move into the next phase of shaping the plan. This shaping the plan phase is also when the environmental impact statement process begins, which is what I'll be going through in more detail today. And I just sort of, it's a little hard to see on that screen, but the circled items are key environmental impact statement items, and you can see that they're kind of just integrated into the comp plan process, which we'll talk about more. Let's go to the next slide. Okay, and then just also as a reminder on what has been decided so far to date by the County Council, we do know our countywide population projection and our countywide employment projection and the assumption of a one-to-one jobs per household assumption. And then we'll add all those, the allocation stuff later once that's been decided. Okay, next slide. All right, so let's dive into talking about SEPA, or the State Environmental Policy Act process. So in your meeting materials, we provided a copy of a draft of issue paper 6. Really to finalize it, we just needed to confirm one more venue date, but it's very close to what the final version will look like. And that document is providing a basic framework for which the county is going to launch its environmental impact review process. And all of this falls under chapters 43.21C RCW and WAC 197-11. So that's the State Environmental Policy Act and its rules. So when we say SEPA, we're referring to both of those things collectively. And we're doing the SEPA process for the non-project action of reviewing and updating the county's comprehensive growth management plan, right? So this isn't a site-specific project, right? This is a very broad comp plan update. So I'm gonna walk through some of the key pieces from that issue paper. And so to start, later this month, the county is planning to advertise its intent to prepare an environmental impact statement to assess the potential impacts of the comprehensive plan update. That intent also is going to kick off the county's SEPA scoping process. I'll explain those a little bit more in a moment. But at a high level, the EIS process, right, an EIS is a tool for identifying and analyzing probable adverse impacts to the environment, considering a range of reasonable alternatives and possible mitigation options to those impacts. And when we talk about scoping, scoping is the part of this process where the county, we're seeking public input, and we're also gonna seek input from the county council to help define the issues related to the comp plan update that should be studied and evaluated in this environmental impact statement. Because we can't study everything, right? So we need to understand what are the key issues and the key impacts that need to be analyzed more closely. And so the EIS, it's very closely integrated into the whole comp plan update process. But the EIS itself, you know, it presents options, it analyzes effects, but it's not a decision document, right? It's a supporting document that needs to be considered before a decision is made, but it's just a supporting document. Let's go to the next slide. Okay, so at a very high level, this slide shows some key steps in this process. The orange-colored rectangles are highlighting some of the key points in the comp plan update process, just to sort of highlight that integration and where those decision points are. Let's see, I also wanted to note that the county, we've hired technical consultants who are gonna be actually writing the EIS and doing that technical analysis. So I'm not an expert on this, but providing the overview of the process and how it's going to work. So the first step is the county, we need to issue an environmental threshold determination. And this is the formal decision on whether or not the county thinks the comprehensive plan update will likely cause significant environmental impacts. And if that's the case, then we need to do some further analysis of those impacts. If the county thinks that we have some significant adverse impacts from this project, we're going to issue a determination of significance. And in that determination, we need to describe the key parts of this project and the main areas that we think there might be impacts related to it. That determination of significance, it also serves as our notice of our scoping notice. So it's this one notice does two things. We say we're determining there's significant probable adverse impacts, and we're launching our scoping process. So scoping, this is when we're going to seek public input and county council direction to define those issues related to the comp plan update that will be addressed in the environmental impact statement. So this helps us narrow the scope of that EIS to those probable significant impacts and reasonable alternatives, because we can't, like I said, we can't study everything, so we need to hone in on those really key items. And so during that scoping process, we'll host a few open houses, so people can show up in person to provide, to learn a little bit more and provide comments in writing in person, but there'll be other ways to provide comment as well, by email, online form, and so forth. Once we go through this scoping process and have that comment period, it basically lets us move forward with developing alternatives or options for the comp plan update. And so those alternatives, you know, should be based on comments from the public, comments from the cities and other agencies, additional technical and economic analysis, and county council policy direction as well. So the idea is that we're going to come up with a few alternatives of how we're going to accommodate that population growth and all of those jobs and other legislative policy changes we need to make. So we need, at some point, we'll work on this over the summer. We're going to need to define very clearly what those alternatives are. And those alternatives are what will be used in the draft environmental impact statement. So this is like, you know, it's one of those 100-plus page documents, pretty technical, very prescriptive process based on the SEPA rules. And it's supposed to provide an impartial discussion of significant environmental impacts of the comp plan update. It's, you know, supposed to be informative for decision makers, share and the public, and share reasonable alternatives, including mitigation measures, that would avoid or minimize those adverse impacts. The draft environmental impact statement, or DEIS, it has to include multiple alternatives. So there's a requirement to consider no action. So we have to consider we're not going to update the comp plan. We're just going to stick with the one we have that was adopted in 2016. And then we need to consider multiple other options on for the update. The draft environmental impact statement, it's also a way for the county to consult with the public, affected tribes, and other agencies in the area. So once it's written, it's then published. There's a 30-day comment period. So we will collect comments from anyone who wants to weigh in. And then that moves us to our next step of selecting a preferred alternative. So based on the feedback that's collected on the draft environmental impact statement, and you know, other considerations that the county council and you all will have a chance to weigh in on that, other things that they want to consider, you know, we also have to make sure we're being consistent with countywide planning policies and the Growth Management Act. So this environmental information plus these other factors, a preferred growth alternative needs to be selected. And this preferred option both informs what the final environmental impact statement is focused on, but it also, it forms the basis of what the updated comp plan is that's gonna go through the legislative process. We need to know, we need to be able to finish the draft so to show you something. And so we need this preferred alternative to, you know, finalize all those details so that we're focusing on what the preferred option is. So the final environmental impact statement, so not only does it really focus on this preferred alternative, it also revises the draft environmental impact statement if needed based on the feedback that was submitted. And that final environmental impact statement, that has to be published before county council makes their final decision. So it has to come before the decision is made at the end of the process. And so the whole SEPA process ends at the same time basically the final decision on the comp plan is made. So, you know, the council has to consider that environmental information along with the other factors and information that they want to pull into their decision making on whether or not to approve the updated comprehensive plan. Okay, let's go to the next slide. If you look at an EIS, it'll have several sections and it'll go through different elements of the environment and analyze those for the various options or alternatives. It's going to talk about earth, air, water, fish and wildlife habitat, energy and natural resources, all on the natural environment side. And on the built environment side, it's going to do some analysis related to land and shoreline use, transportation, public services and utilities, and conformance with the Growth Management Act. Next slide. Okay, so I mentioned we're going to have to come up with some alternatives that are going to be studied in the draft EIS, so I want to expand on that a little bit more. As I mentioned, we need a no-action alternative where we just present the current plan as is with no changes to it. And then additional alternatives will need to be developed. And so the county and each of the cities are going to need to consider what they'd like to have included in those alternatives. And once a few of those alternatives are defined, they're going to be studied in the draft EIS. And then the preferred alternative could be one of those alternatives. It also could be a portion of an alternative, or it could be a mixture. Maybe there's some things from one alternative, some other things from another alternative, and so forth. But basically, the alternatives, they define the maximum amount of action and impacts that you're analyzing. So you can't pick a preferred alternative that's something totally different that's not covered within those alternatives that are being studied. Or if you do that, it just triggers a whole lot of additional work if you want to do that. So that those alternatives are important because they're really defining the maximum amount of change, essentially, that's being considered. Since, you know, we'll be working on development of these alternatives through the summer, and we don't have examples, you know, we don't have anything to share with you yet about those. We thought we'd share what happened during the last comp plan update, just to give an example of what the alternatives were for that 2016 update. So for the 2016 update, there were four land use alternatives that were considered. Alternative one was the required no action alternative, which made no changes to existing urban growth area boundaries, policies or regulations in place at the time. Alternative two made no changes to existing urban growth area boundaries, but incorporated updates to policy direction, land use zoning, county council principles and values, acknowledged some existing trends, and resolved some mapping inconsistencies. The third alternative incorporated modest urban growth area boundary expansions. And then the fourth alternative included rural and resource area changes. So those were the four alternatives studied in the draft EIS. For the preferred alternative that was selected for that last comp plan update, it included pieces of alternatives one, two, and three. So it wasn't completely one alternative that was studied in the draft EIS, but a mixture. Let's go to the next slide. Okay, so I'm just gonna wrap up and this is the same slide as before, but with some dates. So I'm just gonna highlight what's coming up next. So the county is planning to issue a determination of significance and scoping notice for the comp plan update on May 15th. That's going to kick off a 21-day scoping comment period, which will take place May 15th to June 5th. During that timeline, we'll hold a few open houses. So those are scheduled to take place on May 28th, May 29th, and May 30th. There's going to be, those are three in-person open houses at different locations throughout the county. We'll also have an online option for people who maybe can't come in person, but they can view the same information online and then submit comments virtually. All of the in-person events, so they'll be in the evening from 7 to 8:30 p.m. And I guess I'll just go through. The May 28th event, we actually have confirmed that now. That's going to be at Ridgefield High School. May 29th is going to be at Vancouver Community Library. And May 30th will be at the Battleground Community Center. So that'll help us collect feedback for the scoping process. We'll then move into development of alternatives over the summer. The goal is by the fall, we'll know what those alternatives are. That then gives the consultants a few months to write the draft EIS so that they can be published in early 2025. With preferred alternative selection happening in spring or early summer of 2025. Then the final environmental impact statement needs to be written by the fall of 2025 to have enough time to get through the adoption process before the end of the year, by the end of 2025. Okay, that is all I have. So glad to answer any questions.
I'll start.
Okay, Alden, fire away.
So the scoping that's done on the, that's due by May 15th, that's the scope of the whole plan, right? Am I?
Yeah, it's scoping the, for the whole comp plan, we're looking for feedback on what to focus on for the environmental analysis of the whole plan.
Oh, okay. So then once you get feedback, like feedback could come up and say, oh, we think you really need to focus in on the residential projection that's been going out. Is that a possibility? Because that's part of the plan.
So folks are going to can say whatever they want to say, right, in terms of what's important to them. But in terms of, if people have concerns about the impacts from the residential development that's going to be planned, like that's a good thing for the consultants to hear, that okay. They should look at that really closely, for instance.
So it's possible that could be something that gets scoped out further.
Maybe Jose and Oliver can chime in. I think there's the planning assumption isn't going to change. So what the numbers are and who's planning for what can't change, because that's going to be locked in, but we can study the impacts Of that, of those numbers.
Okay.
Yes.
So it could be that you could be looking at exploring the impacts of the estimate of the population growth, the residential decision, and the employment, all three of those.
Right. So, like, how do we accommodate that growth? How are we going to distribute the residential growth? I mean, we're assigning it to jurisdictions, but are we going to go up or out? Essentially, is what we'd be looking at. And it seems like the state is guiding us in one direction, and so we have to look at what the impacts of that are, I think, particularly sort of existing infrastructure,
right,
the built environment, and those types of things.
Right. But basically, those are the three main things of the plan, is the population, the residential, and the employment. So they're all going to have potential huge impacts on environmental. Right.
Yep. Yes, this is all, but that's what the scoping and the input from the public is going to be. Like Jose was saying, we know how many housing units we're going to be planning. For example, this is going to be true for the smaller cities as well, or the other cities. So they're going to make, in conversation with their residents, if you will, determine how are they going to accommodate that. Are there going to be some upzoning? Are we going to be growing out or growing up? So those are some of the conversation that will come out of that. How do we accommodate this growth within our jurisdiction? Do we have to expand the urban growth boundary, for example?
So Seldon, again, if they go up and out, then there'll be environmental impact.
Exactly.
That specific.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
This is Commissioner Baker. I had a question for the prior slide, right? Not the slide, but the box. So May 15th is when you identify the impacts, which is what Commissioner Eldon was kind of referring to for like the scoping. So my main question was what are some of the things that have been identified that are going to go into that May 15th? I mean, you spoke a little bit about the considerations, but what are some of the other things that will go into that May 15th?
So I can speak to that. So it's pretty general on the, you know, we're going to say we're planning for, what is it, almost 200,000 more people. Like, that's a lot of people. So I think highlighting, you know, one of the reasons why we think this is, you know, if we were planning for 100 more people, we may not determine that this is a significant comp plan update, right? But the amount of people, the amount of jobs are, you know, so we'll summarize kind of the key pieces of what we're planning for and why we think they could be impactful. And then we'll basically list a little bit more detailed than we showed on the slide, those different elements that could be impacted by having to figure out how to accommodate all these people and all these jobs. So it's pretty high level on the 15th, and then we're seeking people's feedback so that we can start to get more specific. Yeah.
So from the 15th through the June 5th, that's the time, because you'll highlight certain things that you find that have kind of raised red flags or needs to be addressed. But the public comment section from business community, the residents and whatnot, that'll be their opportunity to highlight things, and then that kind of goes into that will help us define what are the issues.
Right, and it's kind of, it's like just starting the process.
Yeah.
Like I feel like we've, you know, it's been a long time to just get to the how many people are we planning for and where are they going to go. So this is really just kicking off. So this is initial feedback. We can then go back and start to come up with, okay, based on what we're hearing, what are some options? And then we need to get some more feedback from you all, from county council, from members of the public, to start taking sort of general ideas. We need to end up with, you know, lines drawn on a map.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we need to get that specific, but we've got several months of work to follow to get there.
Basically, yes. This is just trying to point us in the direction, right?
Yes.
So we know which where we're going.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Hey, Jenna, you mentioned that the county has a consultant on board now. Who was that consultant? Did you say it? And I just missed it.
No, I don't think I did.
Oh,
so
okay.
Seaview Environmental is who our contract is with, and they've got a team of folks working behind them as well to do that writing.
A local consultant or?
They are
state?
Based in Washington.
Okay.
Yep.
And this is what they do then?
Yes, they are EIS experts.
Okay. I may have this name wrong, but the Climate Justice Commission, where do they fit into this, and will they have input into this, or are they also looking at the impacts of the GMA or the EIS on the GMA?
Yeah. Well, I'm working on our climate chapter, so I can start there, and
okay.
And Oliver can chime in. So we have an Environmental Justice Coalition and a community advisory group, both helping us develop this new climate chapter, which I will be back on later in May to talk to you all about that at your next work session. But so we're working with those groups. We're very focused on the, okay, we have this new legislation, how are we going to implement it? So that is a, you know, one piece of many of what needs to be considered as part of updating the comp plan. So that will, you know, any new policies, you know, that are proposed for the comp plan will need to be studied as part of this EIS, right? So it's growth alternatives, but it's also what policy changes are being proposed in the comp plan, too, that need to be studied. So those groups, so they're helping us with this one, creating this new chapter. We're also keeping them informed on the general comp plan process, so they'll be welcome to chime in and provide feedback. But I would say this, it's not their primary focus, but I'll look to Jose and Oliver if they think, or if they're thinking about it differently in any way.
No, I think Jenna, you summarized it very well. They're going to be part of the process, providing us input. At some point, when we have the alternatives really firmed out, we're going to be looking at what the climate folks are looking at and where they are to be able to say how does the alternative or what is being proposed impact let's say the climate or some of the ideas that are in that alternative. Will it require us to do things differently? Those are some of the issues that we will have to be looking at. Housing, for example, vehicle might travel, whichever alternative you look at, how could you then measure those impact relative to what you're looking at?
I guess one other thing I'd add is, I mean, I don't think climate change was really studied as part of past comp plan EIS analyses, and it now has to be. Yeah.
Yeah, and so in 2016, this wasn't an issue that had to be part of the alternatives, and now it is. And in 2016, you developed four alternatives. And you're kind of seeing four alternatives here. Is that because having more alternatives than just four just doesn't make sense, or everything you think that is going to be in the EIS will fall into this one of these four categories, or the combination of four categories for alternatives?
Oliver and Jose can probably chime in on this more.
Typically, what I have seen in other EISs are really three alternatives. In 2016, what happened was very unique, if I may say so, that alternative four was introduced very late in the process, and a decision was made by the CEPA authority or whatever to make a determination whether that should be studied or not, or whether we should start a new process, because it was very late in the process. A decision was made to just include it to study. But as Jenna indicated, the preferred alternative only drew from alternative 1, 2, and 3, didn't do anything, didn't draw from alternative 4. But typically what you will see is 3 alternatives in the EIS work. Throughout the time I've been here and looking at other counties, typically it's 3 alternatives. But any other alternative can be studied. It's not like it's prohibited, but it has to be done timely, coming from the public input as well.
Alternative number 1 is a no action alternative, and it seems like what we're hearing is that won't happen here at all. We need to take action, and there is going to be a determination of significance, and they're really forcing us to look at alternatives 2 and 3 much more than no action at all, I assume that.
Well, I was going to say, I think a no action alternative, it basically gives you a baseline. Like if we did nothing, here's what the impact would be. So an EIS, it's kind of it's a comparative document, right? It doesn't necessarily have to give you exact analysis, but it can compare this alternative versus no action. So it's very useful in the analysis. And I don't think we can say no action is off the table. Like, I think we have to keep it under consideration the whole time. That's sort of part of what SEPA makes us do. But it is easy to think about, gosh, we have a lot of things to change. It's hard to imagine the current comp plan would meet all those needs.
Excuse me, this is Commissioner Baker. So that kind of goes into all the different, like the EIS isn't just like one issue. It's a whole range of issues. And so some issues may have no, like we don't have to change this, but in another category, yes, there's alternative 3 would be, it just gives us options for each one of the, because I would imagine each piece of the EIS needs to be gone over, and some are going to need changing and some are not, and some need more than others, correct?
Yeah, it's typically a range mm-hmm. of options. For example, the no action is you're planning for, let's say, 200 additional 1,000 folks, can that be fitting in the existing plan? The answer will likely be no. Mm-hmm. So that will likely be the conclusion of looking at the existing plan or the no action. Then the other 2 or 3 alternatives, however many, may say this is another way to accommodate that same growth, for example, or this direction from the council and the public. Or this may be another way or another option to look at the same growth that you're planning for. That's what those alternatives really provide. So it's a range of options to be studied. But at the end of the day, you have to be looking at, in each of those ranges, how well do they address the growth that you're planning for, and what are the potential impacts? That's what you're going to be looking at.
Great. Hey, let's see, Steve Marash, we haven't heard from you. Do you have any questions?
No, thank you. I don't have any questions.
And Mark?
No.
Eldon.
Ms. Eldon. So, Jose, early when you started out this evening about meeting with the jurisdictions to meet the residential employment, are there any jurisdictions that you think are going to come back and say they need to go out to meet the plan? In other words, UGA?
Yes. Well, I know one for sure that Battleground is in an interesting.
I mean, that's where I live. And
right.
Right up to
well, and what they're, I think, proposing is to do an expansion to the west, to Dollar's Corner, and actually to remove a portion south of their UGA that used to be the Dollar's Corner, but Meadowglade Rural Center, where there's a lot of one-acre homes and it's zoned residential, but they don't think it's likely to turn over. So I think that's a unique situation. I think some of the other jurisdictions have looked for modest expansion for employment. That's sort of about the extent of what I've heard.
So there will probably be some outward
proposal, okay. Yeah.
There will be some proposal, okay. And that is the function of the allocation.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Where are we, like, in the UGA that the county is in charge of? Where are we in that process, or where are you? How does it look in for us?
It's a good question. It's I think one of the things we were waiting for is the council to give us to lock in what the allocation is going to be. Given the sort of the direction from the state using the HAP tool, I know for us and for all of the other jurisdictions, the challenge is going to be, okay, you have to provide housing by income bands. Do we have enough land zone for that type of housing? And how do we, if we don't, what do we do? Do we upzone certain areas? Does it make sense to expand the boundary for higher density? So those are some of the questions I think we need to
answer. It'll probably be a range of all those,
right.
All those options.
Yeah.
And for the cities, let's say Vancouver, do you build up? Do you change? You know, that's going to be the conversation they're going to be having within their own local jurisdiction. Some of the cities, my understanding is that some of them are embarking on the revitalization of their downtown, and there may be opportunity to build up. I can't speak for them, but they're looking at every option.
Just pausing to see if there's any more questions or any more thoughts. And so, Jenna, what as the Planning Commission, what should we expect, or how do we weigh in to help you in this process?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're interested in attending any of those open houses, just even to just listen to what other people are saying, or to even participate yourself and realize actually how hard it is sometimes to give feedback, right? Like, these are the concept of scoping is really hard to wrap. It's really hard for me to wrap my head around. I'm assuming it is for other people too, for, you know. So, so you can sort of participate in more of an observational way. Once we close that comment period, we'll summarize all the comments that we get, and we'll share back with you. So I think that's coming next. Okay, so here's what we're hearing so far. Then we're also going, there'll be a series of conversations on building on what Jose and Oliver just said, on the figuring out alternatives or ideas that need to be considered and then somehow packaged into alternatives for the unincorporated area. And then as the cities will be doing something, we'll be doing the same thing, and then we'll get folded into sort of the full package for the countywide alternative. So I think it's a series of conversations, but it really is like, I feel like this is like the start of the actual, you know, we've been waiting to get the numbers, but now this is actually, okay, so now what do we do? So Oliver, Jose, anything you would add to that?
No, at some point, like Jenna said, we welcome your attendance at any of the open house so you can listen. And as we move into taking in all the comments and beginning to look at what the alternative will look like, we are not there yet, but when we are there, we might share that with you so that you know what's going to be studied in the draft EIS. And then when that is completed, you, as a citizen, as a Planning Commission member, can provide comment during the comment period. the time that this will come to you in a hearing format will probably be in the selection of the preferred, which we might share with you, and then you can say, yeah, move forward to study that in the final EIS. But I don't expect any hearing following this work session with the Planning Commission, because we don't have anything for you to have a hearing on. This is just informational in terms of steps we are moving into. As soon as we have the council make a decision on the allocation, this will be very, very helpful so that we know exactly what we are taking out to the public, as well as the local jurisdictions. They know what their share of the growth is and how they plan to accommodate that. They will be in coordination with us, because we are doing one environmental impact statement for the county and all the local jurisdictions. So they will be feeding us as well in what they will be proposing through their own process.
And that's this Tuesday, this next Tuesday, May 7th? No. Is that when they're making that decision?
That's when the hearing is scheduled.
Yeah. Well, that's when we're hoping they make that decision.
Yes.
All right.
So, Oliver, what goes out on May 15th? This is when you actually send out, here's the scope that we're looking for comments on, right, for a 21-day period. Yeah. Will the Planning Commission be copied on that communication out? I mean, I'd love to see it.
Sure. The Planning Commission wants to
say,
yeah.
Members, here's what we've sent out looking for comments on.
Sure. We can. Typically, we do a press release.
I know, but I may miss that.
Yeah, we can share that with the planning.
I just want something to pop up on my screen.
All right, that's fine. That's fair. But there's not going to be a hearing. Typically, we have a work session, then a hearing. There's not going to be a hearing on this item. It's informational. Yeah. So I see staff taking note to make sure we share that with you. Thank you.
Commissioner Berkold, these satellite meetings, battleground, et cetera, are they going to be online too, so that we could at least check in without having to go?
Those will not. That's very difficult. So we were going to have the 3 in-person open houses and then the 1 online with sort of a self-guided. Yep.
So you may participate on the 1 online if you cannot make any of the 3, so it's okay. It's not mandatory. Yeah, it's not mandatory. It's just.
Any final comments from the Planning Commission or other questions?
Go ahead, Jeremy.
I can see you're thinking about it.
I was thinking about it. Well, I was just thinking because of the different, those comment sessions are like in different geographical areas. You know, I think I will probably attend the one in Vancouver because it's real close to where I'm living, and maybe some of the other commissioners might want to choose one next.
One in Battleground too, right?
Mm-hmm. Battleground, Richfield, Vancouver, the Vancouver Library.
Yep.
Yeah. I appreciate the information. It was very helpful today.
Yeah, thank you. Before we, close, I want to introduce or have Leslie Lopez introduce herself. She's very gladly sitting in for our own legal counsel. She is the boss to Ms. Chris Cook, so I'll let Leslie introduce herself.
We call Leslie.
Leslie Lopez, is it on? Is it on? Okay. Leslie Lopez, Chief Civil Deputy at the Prosecuting Attorney's Office. As you all know, well, maybe don't know, Chris is out on vacation for a couple weeks, so I'm filling in for her. So this is the first planning committee meeting I've been to, so fascinating. And I look forward to the next, I think there's a work session in 2 more weeks, so I'll be back for that. But certainly if you have any questions while Chris is out, you know, you can contact me and I'll do my best to help.